You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by FitzDares, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by Thoroughbred Racing Commentaries Global Rankings. Good morning. Thanks for listening. It's Friday, December the 3rd. It's a bright morning here in TW11, and the significance of that, apart from the fact that it's a nice bright morning, is that I'm only down the road from Sandown Park, where the feature race this weekend is the Tingle Creek Chase, and there hasn't been any overnight rain that had been anticipated. So the ground is good to soft on the chase course, good to soft, good in places on the hurdles course. That'll be one of the races that we will be discussing later in this programme, together with the John Durkin Chase at Punchestown and also the Many Clouds Chase at Aintree. But first of all, we need to take stock of what happened not only in the High Court yesterday, but at the British Horse Racing Authority headquarters, continuing these two cases. First of all, the BHA's case against jockey Robbie Dunn, and also the case in the High Court between Freddie Tillitsky and fellow rider Graham Gibbons. Lydia was across both yesterday, but was tuned fully via Zoom into BHA headquarters. This was a very, very busy day in the Robbie Dunn case. Lydia, where to start?
Well, it started shortly after 10 a.m. and Louis Weston, who is the barrister for the BHA, formally rested his case just before 4 o'clock. And we heard from 10 witnesses. We began with a fence attendant at Stratford on the 8th of July 2020. And this person came forward as a result of the newspaper stories that appeared in the press this year. We also heard from three valets, Graham Piper, his nephew Lewis Piper, and also Mark Sinfield. We heard from former amateur jockey, now nurse, Hannah Welch. Clifford Baker, headman to Paul Nichols, was heard from. And then we also heard from two current British Horse Racing Authority people, the investigator Nathan Taylor, albeit very briefly, John Burgess, who became the acting head of integrity on the resignation of Chris Watts. Chris Watts himself, and again, at the end of the day, briefly, the trainer, Neil Kim.
The fence attendant, and it was stipulated by Brian Barker QC, leading the inquiry, that he must not be named. He has led most of the reports. Would you have written it up this way?
I think so, because he was a very confident, very convincing witness. He testified to having witnessed Robbie Dunn spitting out abuse towards Bryony Frost, something that he described as a real woah moment, a standout moment, beyond memorable. Under cross-examination, he said he was 100% certain of the exact words. He was struck by the manner of the delivery, and he said it was a very personal, very aggressive statement. I'm not going to use the words that he testified to. And he also observed that at least two other jockeys were closer to this incident than he was. And the barrister, Roderick Moore, representing Robbie Dunn, said that this was undisputed, named those jockeys as Lorcan Murta and Adam Wedge. The witness suggested that there would have also have been other jockeys within earshot. And the witness said, it's quite a significant point to me that they have not come forward as witnesses.
Lydia, another key witness yesterday was Hannah Welch. Who is Hannah Welch?
She is the former amateur rider who has since retrained as a nurse, and Roderick Moore made much of when she had last ridden under rules. I think they agreed that it was around November 2019. But Hannah Welch made an allegation that she had had an altercation with Mr. Dunn, that she was verbally abused and reduced to tears by Robbie Dunn after a race at Chepstow in November 2018. She described this as, he stood very close in front of me and raised a voice and used swear words in a manner to intimidate. And she said that that made it different from other use of swear words that she might have heard in the sport because of the intimidation and the manner of it. She said, I don't appreciate being spoken to by being sworn at by anyone. I don't think that's okay. And she said that that was a contributory factor to me giving up jump racing, and it was something that was not easily forgotten. She said she had a very clear recollection of events. She said it happened because, in Mr. Dunn's opinion, she had cut him up on the top band. She repeated that he was shouting and swearing at me and standing very close. I was crying and he did not stop. Roderick Moore asserted that Mr. Dunn had said that he had spoken very calmly to her and that he had not seen her in tears, to which Hannah Welch replied, "That's incredible." Later on, as the last piece of evidence from this witness, she was asked by Alison Royston, who is the third panel member of the judicial panel. She was asked whether she felt able to report the incident. Welch said, "I thought it would not be regarded as serious enough. I thought it would have retributions for me if I carried on riding. The other jockeys would not like the fact that I'd reported on an incident like this."
Lydia, for the second consecutive day, and I raised this with Lee yesterday, there seemed to be much debate about what constitutes bullying, what constitutes banter or bickering, as it was suggested yesterday.
Yes, bickering was the word that was frequently used. Then this line of argument was particularly focused in the cross-examination of Graham and Lewis Piper, the valets. They were working at Southall on the 3rd of September last year, and that's the date which relates to the charges that Robbie Dunn actually accepts. He's been charged with 7 breaches of the rules, of which he's admitted 1, that's behaving in a violent or improper manner, at Southall in September 2020. And there was much discussion between the barristers and the Pipers about what would constitute bickering and what would constitute bullying. They were asked for themselves to define that. Graham Piper noted that Bryony Frost was quieter than usual after the argument, but he said that the incident was nothing out of the ordinary, that he'd have stepped in otherwise, and he likened the weighing room to a fun environment and more like a family. Lewis Piper said that the weighing room is a place where everyone gets on with everyone. We have good fun, a laugh. It's a good place to be. And he said that he was 10 to 15 yards away from the incident. And he recalled that Bryony Frost was still hanging about in the male weighing room. And he suggested that if she was distressed, she would surely have gone into her own room and hid away. This, of course, contrasts with Bryony Frost's own testimony on Wednesday, and she said that this incident happened about 10 minutes before the race. The 5-minute call to the jockeys would have already come, and she would have been going out to ride at any moment. So from her perspective, she would be suggesting that she couldn't go away because she was about to be going out to ride. Louis Weston, who's the BHA's barrister, cross-examined Lewis Piper and asked him what drew his attention to Robbie Dunn and Bryony Frost, because Lewis was stressing that he was very busy doing other things. And the point I felt that Louis Weston was trying to make was that if Lewis Piper was preoccupied with doing his work, doing his day job, as all the valets suggested that that's what they were doing, that would be their major preoccupation. Of course, it would be; it's their job. But Louis Weston was pointing out, if you were that far away, what was it that drew your attention to the incident?
Okay, now we can't leave this without talking about Chris Watts, who is the former head of integrity at the BHA, who doesn't work there anymore. And so much has rested on whether his departure from the authority is going to be of any kind of significance in this case. Did yesterday tell us anything much?
It told us quite a lot. Let's start with his departure, because Roderick Moore tackled this right towards the end of Chris Watts's evidence. Roderick Moore said, "You're no longer employed by the BHA. We're told that you resigned." Chris Watts confirmed that he said yes in September. Roderick Moore said, "Was the reason for your resignation anything to do with your conduct connected with this investigation?" There was a long pause, and then Chris Watts said no. Now, I should stress, when I say that there was a long pause, there were some connectivity issues at Zoom, so that may, with the Zoom testimony, so that may or may not be significant. Roderick Moore said, "Was the reason for your resignation anything to do with the data breach or the leak?" And Chris Watts said no. Absolutely not. Earlier on in that cross-examination, Roderick Moore had asked him whether he could explain how information about the case had reached the Sunday Times and the Mail on Sunday in particular. And Chris Watts said that he could not account for that.
So what did the cross-examination of Chris Watts centre on, Lydia?
Well, I think that Roderick Moore was trying to draw out some inconsistencies or inadequacies of the investigation. Chris Watts was asked about suggestions that Jimmy Frost had sought revisions to his daughter's formal statements to the BHA. Chris Watts insisted that he had always said at all times to those parties advising Bryony Frost, there was more than just Jimmy Frost, there were a couple of other advisors as well, that the testimony absolutely always 100% had to be hers and hers only. We also heard from a couple of riders who had been interviewed by, we heard Roderick Moore refer to the testimony of a couple of riders who had been interviewed by Chris Watts last December, namely Tom Scudamore and Gavin Sheehan, both of whom said that they felt that the account that Chris Watts had written down of their testimony was either not fully what they said or had got some omissions in it. They had been re-interviewed this September after obviously a lot of water had gone under the bridge. Now, the expectation is that Roderick Moore will be concentrating on what these riders have to say when he starts presenting his case for the defence next week. It was partly to do with the manner in general of Bryony Frost's riding, and Gavin Sheehan and Tom Scudamore had comments to make about that in particular, which they felt had been omitted from Chris Watts's evidence. There was also an instance whereby Roderick Moore seemed to be suggesting that there was a line of inquiry that Chris Watts hadn't fully followed up. And he had to concede that that was a fair point.
And Lydia, no case, however serious it is immune, it seems, to the bizarre.
Roderick Moore referred to statements from two witnesses, which we anticipate he will be calling for the defence next week, the trainer, Laura Young, and her friend and employee, Jay Dalton. And this rather, I mean, there's so many little details in this case, which I'm sure will be pored over in greater detail later on. But this centres around an Airbnb, a double-decker bus that Jimmy Frost and his wife have on their premises. And in a conversation by phone that Chris Watts was having with trainer Laura Young, who was sitting in line waiting for a car wash with Jay Dalton in the passenger seat, she was saying that she wanted somewhere unusual to stay. And Chris Watts recommended Jimmy Frost, or suggested, have you heard of Jimmy Frost's place? And this, Roderick Moore contended, was evidence that Chris Watts and Jimmy Frost were friends. And this is a thread that has been running through the case, that Jimmy Frost and Chris Watts were good friends, and that this was the impression that Laura Young and Jay Dalton had got from that particular conversation. Chris Watts, it must be said, vigorously denied this. He said it was absolutely ludicrous. He asked to be provided with the dates that he had supposedly stayed at Jimmy Frost's Airbnb. And he stressed that 100% there was only one occasion in which he met Jimmy Frost, and that was when he took the evidence. And again, he asked Roderick Moore to supply the dates whereby it had been suggested that he had stayed at Jimmy Frost's Airbnb. At the end of Chris Watts's evidence, Louis West of the BHA did point out that given that Chris Watts is no longer an employee of the BHA, they had no power of impulsion to require Chris Watts to attend and give evidence, and he just wanted that to be noted.
Lydia, there was quite an interesting section of Chris Watts's cross-examination when the subject of Richard Johnson, the former multiple champion jockey, came up. What was that?
This derives from an email that Chris Watts sent to Bryony Frost on the 28th of September, talking about potential witnesses, and asked, there was a list of names, and asking who she would want him to approach, or might want him to approach, and who he wouldn't be wanting to approach. Some of the names were highlighted in red. Roderick Moore wanted to know, why are you asking her to tell you people she didn't want to be interviewed? Chris Watts made the point that this was at the time when Bryony Frost hadn't stated whether she wanted to be formally interviewed. Roderick Moore disputed that. And so this then boiled down to centering on Richard Johnson. Richard Johnson was never approached, according to Roderick Moore. Chris Watts said that there had been a conversation between him and Richard Johnson at Cheltenham in November 2020, but he conceded that he didn't have a note about that. Roderick Moore wanted to know why that would be, and Chris Watts said, "I can't provide an explanation." So that was the second time during the course of this evidence that Chris Watts was having to concede to Roderick Moore that something should have been done that wasn't done, or at least that there wasn't an adequate explanation for not doing it.
Well, the hearing continues on Tuesday from 10 o'clock. Now, at the High Court yesterday, evidence was heard in the case involving Graham Gibbons and Freddie Tulitzky, and Jim McGrath, formerly of Channel 4 and Timeform, took to the stand for a significant portion of the day.
Yes, and obviously he's currently a pundit on Sky Sports Racing as well. And he contended that the incident could have been easily avoided. He also said it was dangerous riding that caused the incident, and the steward should have come to that conclusion. Now, Patrick Lawrence, who's the QC defending Graham Gibbons, said that that was without foundation. But Jim McGrath focused on what he said was a discernible movement by Gibbons, changing his grip on the reins and resulting in his mount moving towards the inside rail, which in Jim McGrath's view led to Freddie Tulicki's mount running out of racing room shortly afterwards. Patrick Lawrence disputed this. He said there was no trace of any significant lateral movements of that horse towards the rail before the collision. He then went on to question Jim McGrath's expertise and said, you know, what basically, why was he able to give these views? He said that he wasn't qualified to make the claim that Graham Gibbons had been guilty of dangerous riding. He asked, "What is it in your life that entitles you to give expert evidence to this court as to whether his riding was far below that of a competent and careful rider?" Jim McGrath referred to his experience as a race reader and a commentator and his knowledge of the rules. Lawrence insisted that didn't amount to sufficient expertise. And in a exchange that went on for some time, an hour, according to reports, and it has been described as quite a testy exchange, it is reported, irritated Jim McGrath, who called attention to solicitor Rory McNeice, who was sitting behind Patrick Lawrence and alongside Graham Gibbons. And this is a quote, I'm quoting Chris Cook's article in the Racing Post. Jim McGrath said, "Mr. McNeice works regularly for the PJA. The PJA thought I was sufficiently experienced to ask me to help in the case of a jockey, Richie McGrath. They clearly thought I had some experience and knowledge that was worth presenting to a tribunal. Off the back of that, they asked me to be involved in two more cases. I declined. I'm not a gun for hire. Like Ryan Moore said yesterday to me, this is tiresome and unpleasant. I don't take any pleasure in being here saying these things. Yes, I do think I can give a reasonable opinion to the court."
Charlie Lane, Lydia, is the other significant figure in this case yesterday.
Yes, he is the defence's expert witness, Charlie Lane, who's a current stewards panel chair of 30 years' experience. And stewards panel chair, that's one of the volunteer stewards who chair inquiries, the inquiry panel at racecourses. Now, he was cross-examined by Edward Foulkes, who was the QC representing Freddie Tulitzky. Mr. Foulkes particularly zeroed in on three races mentioned in Charlie Lane's report, one of which resulted in a ban for Ryan Moore, who was an expert witness for Tulicki this week. And Charlie Lane said that those races had been suggested to him by Rory McNeice as other examples of careless riding. And Edward Foulkes made the point that Mr. Lane's first duty was to the court. He disputed whether examples cherry-picked by Mr. McNeice, including Ryan Moore's only suspension for careless riding among the three races chosen, was really suitable, and had he really thought about that? Did he think it was only a coincidence that that race had been chosen? And Lane replied, "I think it may well not have been, but I don't know. I didn't ask, I'm afraid." It then moved on to the particular incident at Kempton. Lane explained that he knew the stewards who were officiating at Kempton that day. He personally still officiated there occasionally, and he didn't think that these facts were an obstacle to him giving a fair appraisal. He said that in his view, he agreed with the stewards on the day's conclusion that the incident had been caused by accidental interference. Mr. Fawkes QC said, shouldn't the stewards' inquiry have been adjourned because the four horses involved, the four jockeys involved in the incident who had fallen or been unseated and brought down, were not available to give the evidence. Charlie Lane said that he felt that the video evidence was sufficient. That's where the case concluded for the day, and it concludes today with closing arguments on both sides, and an immediate verdict is not expected. But I think there's a couple of things that are going to be coming out of this from the long term. I mean, one is the point about the adjournment of that steward's inquiry. You know, that is not. I don't think the BHA would reflect that was procedurally correct. Also, Charlie Lane in his evidence agreed with Mr. Fawkes QC that jockeys may not be open and frank in inquiries. And this line of questioning obviously arose from the comments by Pat Cosgrave on Tuesday that there was a jockey's code of conduct not to get involved or say too much. So thematically from this very sad case, those are the two things I think that the British Horse Racing Authority and the sport will be focusing upon.
Okay, I do appreciate for everybody. It's been interesting, but a tough listen this week at times. I'm incredibly grateful to Lydia and to Lee the last couple of days for trying to digest help us to digest an enormous amount of quite weighty stuff. And it's been quite easy to forget that we are actually here to talk about horse racing, Lydia. And there's a lot of good horse racing this weekend, like a lot of good horse racing on this weekend.
It's absolutely storming this weekend. Should we start with the Tingle Creek at Sandown, yeah, shall we?
Definitely, because even Minor Shishkin, it's still a belter. And doesn't it really revolve around the Chacun Pour Soi that you've seen a couple of times, absolutely smashing horses up in Ireland, bowling up again?
I'm a massive, massive fan of Chacun Pour Soi, and I'm expecting him, even though this is his seasonal debut, so all four horses that he'll be facing are definitely more match fit than him, and potentially more race fit than him. Even so, I'm expecting him to be really, really impressive. I think right-handed suits him. I think he's a really good jumper, and in this circumstances, I think a powerful enough stare. I am less bothered by the rising final furlong here than I am about the tight course, the old course of the scene of the Queen Mother Champion Chase at Cheltenham, where he was disappointing when beaten in March. On that occasion, Nubinegra finished in front of him. Nubinegra was thumped by him at Punchestown. Nubinegra has since come out and been pretty impressive in the Schlur Chase. So I'm expecting Chacun Pour Soi to beat Nubinegra in these circumstances in the Tingle Creek. I'm not expecting him to finish in front of Nubinegra in the Champion Chase.
That's interesting. Let's talk a little about the Many Clouds Chase at Aintree. That takes place tomorrow, because it's thrown up perhaps a slightly more interesting field than people would have imagined. And again, Nubinegra's connections here represented by Protectorat, who'll be ridden by Bridget Andrews, against the grand old Native River at 11.
Oh, superb Native River. A lot of rain has fallen in the north. It is soft ground. That will suit him. He can get into a tremendous rhythm. He's still absolutely no back number at the age of 11. I think we saw that he's not effective at the Cheltenham Gold Cup level of things, but this would be a scenario in which he would be feared. Protectorat, I thought, ran superbly when second in the Gold Cup, the Paddy Power Gold Cup at Cheltenham. He obviously has got a Grade 1 victory here at Aintree to his name. So it's going to be interesting whether he can cope with open Grade 1 company. This is going to be the first proper test of that. And he did make a significant error in his seasonal debut, which contributed to him being further back than would have been ideal against the winner on that occasion. So it's going to be fascinating, this.
Yeah, and you don't want to turn off your TV set on Sunday either, because you've got the Fitzdares Peterborough Chase at Huntingdon. Also, of course, the most important race of the day, the Fitzdares Loves the Nick Luck Daily Handicap at 2:27 at Huntingdon. And some serious racing at Punchestown, the John Durkin and the Hilly Way. Who are going to be the star acts, do you think?
Well, in the Hilly Way, it's going to be Enigamen, clearly, who was the star novice over shorter distances in Ireland last season. Didn't make it to the Cheltenham Festival, was incredibly impressive after that. He has been sent to the Hilly Way by his trainer, Willie Mullins, which seems like a suitable opening position for a novice coming into open company. So it'll be exciting to see him. And the John Durkin is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is ridiculous. And this is just how ridiculous it is. Alaho, Patrick Mullins. Asterion Falange, Brian Cooper. Envoi Allen, Rachel Blackmore. Fakir Dudery, Mark Walsh. Briony Frost is going to get the ride on Franco de Port for Willie Mullins, very interestingly. What a weekend it could be for her. She's got Grenadine, of course, in the Tingle Creek as well. Jana Dill, Jodie McCarvey, Kenboy Danny Mullins, Mellon Brian Hayes, Manella Times, and Tornado Flyer. Well, 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 what a race for the John Durkin. I mean, that sells itself. I mean, there is another talking point. Lydia, Album Photo's not going to run.
So he is going to have a racecourse gallop instead and head to his usual target at Tremore on New Year's Day. And remember, the conclusion that Willie Mullins came to at the end of last season was that that horse lacked fitness going into the Gold Cup. And he now, having stated that he was wanting to campaign the horse more regularly this season, I think he would say that the ground has thwarted him in that particular ambition. Unless, of course, we see the horse in the Irish Gold Cup. I mean, that could be a difference. But having hoped to run him at Furley's and pulled him out because of the ground, and hoped to run him here again because of the ground, Willie Mullins says that the horse isn't going to be ready. That is disappointing. I mean, clearly it is disappointing. It's just as disappointing not to see the Gold Cup winner as it would be not to see Champ in the many clouds for the reasons that Nicky Henderson has explained, or Shishkin ditto in the Tingle Creek.
Lydia, this is a ridiculously good race. I mean, we're banging on about good horses not taking each other on. There's a load of good horses taking each other on here.
They really are, and Willie Mullins is stacked. We'll come back to that in a moment. But Envoi Allen is there, and he dotted up on his seasonal debut against much lesser opposition. This is a proper test, and so far, when he's had proper he has come up short. Now, there have been reasons for that, the two runs at the back end of last season. But, you know, this would be a proper test for him. Fakir Dudaris, who's already begun this season with a proper grade one type performance against lesser horses. He is race fit and heading here and at a distance that very much suits him. So he's going to be a major player for Joseph O'Brien. And then Willie Mullins has got a whole host of horses representing him. Alaho making his seasonal debut. The horse absolutely pulverised the field in the Ryanair under Rachel Blackmore. And then also the likes of maybe Jana Dill, Kenboy, Mellon, Tornado Flyer, these Asterion Falange, these are all going to be interesting horses that are up against a top flight of horses. I mean, we know that Ireland has got this collection of really top flight horses, and this is an incredible clash.
Well, it's Friday, which means it's time for the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings. And with the Japan Cup just in the rearview mirror, we thought we would show you exactly the strength of Japanese racing and give it some global context, having a look at not only the horses, but the sires, the jockeys, the trainers. So here are the top 10 horses in Japan at present on the TRC rankings. At 10 is Deep Bond, ranked 71 overall, a triple grade 2 winner this season and second in the Tenno Show, the Prefoy winner, of course, on Arc Trials Day. At 9 is Authority, the Japan Cup runner-up, rated 64. At 8 is Danon Kingley, ranked 63, the winner of the Grade 1 Yasuda Kin. And at 7 is the filly Resistencia. She's ranked 58, and she was second in the Sprinter Stakes Grade 1, and she was a very exciting 2-year-old in her former career. At 6, you'll know this one well, Love's Only You, the filly who won the filly and mare turf at the Breeders' Cup, and also the Queen Elizabeth II at Sha Tin in Hong Kong. She's ranked 47 overall. Ranked 38 overall and 5 in Japan is the very exciting 3-year-old by Kingman, Schnellmeister, who was good enough to finish second to Gran Alegria in the Mile Championships and won the Grade 1 NHK Mile. One to look out for next year. Four is Chronogenesis, our old friend, the mayor. She's ranked 25 overall, having been much higher in her pomp, but she still was good enough to win the Japanese equivalent of the King George, the Takarazuka Kinnan, in June. At three is the cult Euphoria, who is still on the march, ranked 13 overall, beat Contrail and Gran Alegria. That's quite an achievement in the Tenno show Autumn. At two, formerly the TRC number one ranked horse in the world, finishes his career at seven, the Triple Crown winner Contrail, up 18 for that very impressive performance in the Japan Cup. And retiring at number one in Japan and three overall is the redoubtable mare Gran Alegria, whose form got another recent boost, and she won her second mile championships as a glorious send-off. So the one and two, three and seven in the world, Gran Alegria and Contrail, they're retired to the breeding sheds in a blaze of glory. James Willoughby is with me. Becoming more familiar with horses in Japan has been one of the great pleasures of this exercise, James.
Yeah, Nick, and you're not alone there either. They definitely get more, a lot more feedback from people taking an interest in Japanese racing and logging onto the Japan Racing website on a Sunday morning to watch videos of their massive races over there. And really, if you are a global racing fan, well, you've just got to do that, haven't you? Just listening to you reel off the credentials and the list of those Japanese horses, well, it's mouthwatering stuff if you're an international racing fan. And the two horses that you mentioned has been great prospects for the future. Euphoria and Schnellmeister, the 2 3-year-olds, goodness me. We're going to be hearing a lot more of those two massively talented animals in 2022.
Now, as I said on my TV show last week, and I credited not only you, but your brilliant other half, Janet Hickman, with spotting a bit of pedigree arcana that will tell you why Japan is now becoming at the cutting edge of global pedigrees.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a link between the pedigrees of Contrail and Essential Quality in that the third dam of Contrail is the second dam of the brilliant Essential Quality. We didn't see at his best in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but of course he put a sparkling three-year-old career together and being the champion two-year-old the year before. And this, I think, just nicely illustrates how Japanese breeding operations have been able to fuse the best of American dirt pedigrees with European grass pedigrees and done so very carefully and selectively over the years. This is no overnight sensation by any means. We've been talking about this now for a number of years, but it's really interesting to pore over. And let me take you back to the Breeders' Cup, Nick, and the Distaff in particular. That shock win there, well, I reckon I had a look the other day. I reckon there are 9 or 10 fillies potentially better than the winner of the Distaff, and yet she won it pretty well, didn't she?
She won it incredibly well. She's a very, very tough mare who can take that international campaigning. And I think on that note, we ought to tip our hats to the trainer. What can you tell me about him and where he sits in the pantheon of trainers overall?
Well, we're talking now about Yoshito Yahagi. Now, Japanese trainers, and to a lesser extent jockeys, are a little limited in that they only have a select number of horses in their barns compared to the massive 300 or 400 horse operations that are more common in America and Europe. But this man, Yoshito Yahagi, has compiled a quite remarkable record of late, and that's catapulted him into the world's top 20, it is now. Of course, he sent out Contrail to win the Japan Cup. And before that, perhaps incidentally, a Grade 3 winner as well. But Love's Only You, King Hermes, who won a big race in Japan, and then March Lorraine, who we've just been talking about, the Breeders' Cup Distaff winner. So he had a double there with his notable purple hat. And we're going to see perhaps quite a bit more of that particular headpiece in the next few years, because I think he's got some fairly bold plans as far as the Breeders' Cup is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said just imagine when they start sending their good ones over, and yeah, many a true word.
That's spoken. Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's right. It exactly does count as a comment like that. And, you know, Yahagi's portfolio of success isn't, you know, just based on one or two shock wins, but it's quite deep as well in Japan. And, you know, he's got this sort of rather mercurial sort of outlook and appearance. He seems highly enthusiastic, which is sort of something we've seen in a few Japanese horsemen, because, you know, there's a tremendous vibe around Japanese racing in Japan. There's such great enthusiasm for the sport, and they so love to see their horses do well overseas. But that kind of masks a steely mind, I fancy. And certainly when you look at his results, Yagi, you can see that he's a target trainer par excellence.
Well, we saw it, didn't we, in the way that Contrail was campaigned back to peaking at the Japan Cup, having been given a quiet enough ride the previous time, and they brought him to the peak. You knew his weight was right, and he went out in an absolute blaze of glory, up 18 and finishes seventh in the world, which doesn't oversell him overall, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it's really because that his four-year-old season has been abbreviated, and he's got to rank lower in our classification, the way we do things. He has to rank lower than Gran Alegria. And the reason for that is Gran Alegria, who is at world number three, has got deeper form recently. She's got two grade ones on her CV. She's got a number of other good efforts. And Contrail's season, he had that excellent comeback second in the Tenno show, autumn. Before that, a slightly disappointing run. And then just this Japan Cup. So he's formed not quite as deep. But as a three-year-old, it was completely the opposite, because he won the Triple Crown in Japan in a style that matched the substance of those performances. And it's really interesting now, you know, the autumn, and you and I have talked on this podcast now about how the different strands of form around the world are all coming together. We were speculating for the autumn. Essential Quality didn't quite get it done, but others have stepped up. In America, Life is good. And in Australia, Very Elegant and Nature Strip. And then we've got that kind of ballast of top European stars there as well. St. Mark's, Basilica, Palace Pier, and the up-and-coming Baid, all of these topped by Nick's Go, and his brilliant, brilliant Breeders' Cup win. It actually turned out to be one hell of a campaign, this did, internationally. And Contrail, he put really the ribbon on it with a spectacularly impressive success, I thought. Held up well off a slow pace at Tokyo and slicing down the outside to win comfortably by two lengths, his rider able to snatch back the reins, crossing the line. That was what we've been saying, and we've been rating him as having the capability to do at TRC Global Rankings for a number of months, especially during his three-year-old season. And it was great to see him round off his campaign. And talking finally of Far Eastern racing, well, last week we mentioned that he's back, Golden 60. Let's not forget him, the Hong Kong star, 12 group race wins, or what we consider group race wins, already on his CV. And all in all, Nick, I'm trying to say this segment in which we talk about international flat racing, it's come to a spectacular fruition in 2021. And I and many others who love this domain cannot wait to see these horses back again in competition when 2022 rolls around.
That would normally be a rousing climax to this segment, James. But just one more thing. So I want to ask you. I want to ask you about riders in Japan, and particularly the effect and impact of Christophe Lemaire, French born, based in France for a long time, renowned international rider, has done really well in Japan. I asked him last weekend whether Contrail was a better horse now, having beaten him in this year's Japan Cup, than he was last year when he beat Contrail on Almond Eye. And he's like, absolutely not. Almond Eye was just a fantastic filly. And of course, he is the regular pilot of Gran Alegria as well. How does he stack up against the locally born and locally raised riders?
Well, he's the number one, and he has been for a number of years. Before him, it was the Italian Mirko De Muro who was the top spot. And it's significant, the identity of these two Europeans. Domestic riders in Japan are gradually getting better, I think. They're gradually getting more experience. And the reason they're getting better is that Japanese racing plays out in a particular way, the way the races are run, and adapting to the demands of races like the Prix de Triomphe has proved rather difficult historically for one or two Japanese jockeys, just because it can be such a different test and a different setting, and the ground conditions being soft as well, and the whole tempo of the race is different. But riders like Yuga Kawada, Yuichi Fukunaga are increasingly, and Keita Tosaki, I must mention him, he's really good, are increasingly really sort of boosting the reputation of domestic Japanese riders. And both of those three gentlemen I mentioned are now in the world's top 40, but Lemaire heads them, currently number six, but a former world number one. And while we're on the subject, the current world number one is a rider I've long wanted to see, not that I've got any impact in it, but I've long wanted to see at the top, and that's, of course, the Kiwi, James McDonald, who, of course, is Australian-based. And at the moment, McDonald, Dettori, Rosario, Buick. Well, if you don't like watching those four gentlemen ride race horses, you really don't like racing itself.
All right, thanks to James and to everyone involved in today's show, particularly Lydia, who has a tip for you.
I'm going to go with Lee's sentimental feeling, and I'm doing it partly out of sentiment, but more out of logic, in that I think he's the soundest jumper in the field, and the horses that are closest to him in ability do have a question to answer over that. So I'm going to go for Native River in the Many Clouds on Saturday, Aintree's 205.
Lydia, thanks so much. Thank you for listening. We will see you again on Monday. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.